Hello, my name is Bill Cummings, and you're listening to Show Me Magic, a God Is in the TV recommend show.
Hello, and welcome to episode 14 of Show Me Magic, a God Is in the TV zine podcast, where we discuss new music and give our recommendations. We also chat about some cult classics. This week, we've got John Clay on the podcast.
Hello, I'm good. How are you?
Not too bad. A bit discombobulated. Sleeping a bit funny, but that's kind of lockdown life for you, isn't it?
Very much so. I've been getting up at some strange times, sometimes 11, sometimes 8 in the morning, sometimes staying in bed, even though I'm awake, and being in bed, doing all sorts of stupid shit on Facebook till about 5 in the afternoon. Is 5 in the afternoon really a thing? 5 is really early evening. So let's out myself now and say that's what I've been doing.
Yeah, and it's hard to remember what day it is as well, isn't it, in some ways? Sometimes.
I'm down with that whole idea. I mean, at first, let's be honest, I think we all are like this. We wanted to just deny that it could be us that would forget what day it is. I mean, what's going on? You're going to know what day it is, right? But right now, I know it's Tuesday.
But I or whatever day you're listening to this.
Tuesday, right? Yes, someone back me up. I don't want to lose another 48 hours. I'm not going back to last month.
Unfortunately, I'm fully aware of the working week still. So, yeah, I can't escape it.
Okay.
It's a bit different when you're a freelancer. So, exactly. John, explain to our audience what it is you do.
I'm under an umbrella of story, I guess. I like story writing, whether it be creative fiction or writing the stories of others that I'm interviewing for blogs, such as yourself. Also, music videos is what I guess I'm most well known for. I like doing short films. That's me. I like stories.
You're very creative. And when I first came across you, you were doing a YouTube playlist, which was great fun.
Oh, God, it was fun. God, how long ago was that? I want to say the last YouTube playlist in that format would say be 2017, 2018. But now I pretty much will compile sessions from Margot's living room in a playlist, which is a live session format for bands. And I feel like I'm selling it now. But you did ask me what I did, and that was part of the question that I've yet to answer.
So there you go. So you're very involved in new music, essentially.
Yeah, pretty much. People are very embarrassed when people ask me what I think about what happened to Adele, and I have to remind myself about who Adele is. Because I know her through Skyfall, and the latest thing was her being outed as being someone thinner than she was before, which I'm sure she doesn't really... have much truck with. I don't really understand why these things are supposed to be important. But yeah, I'm not really clued up on the mainstream as much as maybe I should be. Even some mainstream indie from the early 2000s is like, what? I don't know what that is. So yeah.
Well, that's cool. That's cool. Because it gives us different perspectives when we have different guests on. So
thank you, Bill. I feel better now.
Different experiences. Yeah, new music can mean one thing to one person, one thing to another person. It's right, isn't it? Yeah, it's true. Jim, of course, is with us. How are you doing, Jim?
Yeah, not too bad. It's Groundhog Day again.
Well, how do you mean? Another week down.
Another bloody pod. No, it just feels like John was saying, you're not sure what day it is, but unfortunately I say I'm very aware which day it is, but it doesn't, which Tuesday is it? It's just been, I don't know, it could be any time in my life right now. It just feels like nothing changes day after day. View stays the same. My mental state stays.
Although, what's the score in England? Because obviously I'm in Wales, so we're still in pretty much full lockdown here.
We're on fire, to be honest.
Well, literally or metaphorically, or
mate,
is that just pre-mark?
Fire Brigade, this isn't the time for a podcast. As much as we need your musical knowledge, your reservoir of inspirational wit, I don't think it's time to be talking to us, friend.
No, I just meant in terms of lockdown, is anything eased or what's going on?
I think so. Okay, well. Who knows? I think it's something along the lines of we can create our own little bubbles of another household that we didn't used to have anything to do with for the past 13, 14 weeks. So now we can sort of link up with another family or another household, like your mum or whatever, or your brother or your sister or something else, your grandparents, as long as they're not already linked with another bubble.
Too confusing.
Exactly. I mean, it's confusing for us, and it's probably even more confusing to some other people, we were just getting on with it as if it was February again. So, who knows? I'm just waiting for the spike.
The second spike.
Yeah, exactly.
Unfortunate. I don't know. I'm just waiting for that here because it's difficult. Yeah, it is difficult. It's restrictive, isn't it, really, in a way? And quite boring after a while and repetitive. Yeah, you're right. But, you know, we'll get through it.
Get on with it.
Yeah, I'm kind of used to it now in a weird kind of way. So
I don't think I've got used to it. That's the problem. I thought I would, and I just haven't.
All right, we're going to crack on with the new music now. So, John, yeah, sorry. Handbrake turn. So, John, now, what's your first track you've bought for us this week?
Okay, Healthy Junkies have done a new song. It's called Some Kind of Girl. It's on their album, Delirious Dream. I suggest listening to it very, very loud. Not that it won't work when it's quiet, but hey, if you've got the speakers, grace yourself for good music.
Girl, you know I lie.
Okay, that was Healthy Junkies with Some Kind of Girl. Yeah, I enjoyed that, and it sort of simmers with a menace and a frustration, I thought. And I like the caustic riff. We had Alison Moss on a few weeks ago from The Kills, and yeah, it reminded me a little bit of The Kills, maybe a bit of PJ Harvey as well. Why did you pick it, John? You're a big fan, aren't you, the band?
Various reasons. The main one that comes to mind is that guitar riff. I don't know if you know much about Healthy Junkies, but essentially when they promote their stuff and their music, they have quite a few songs which mess around the time signatures, but it's mostly 4/4 stuff. However, this one I first heard at a gig, and I just thought, this is really different for them. It's got a really good swing to it. The guitar line is awesome. I could see images in my head. And obviously, I don't know if you know, but I did a music video for them. And you should know, you published a piece regarding that whole era of our working together, myself and the band. But yeah, they've got a lot of stuff going on with them in terms of what they actually believe in. They're not afraid to say it. So many good reasons to love the song. I can't say enough.
Do you think, Jim?
Yeah, no, I like that one as well. It wasn't quite what I was expecting. I don't know what I was, but it was that when that first guitars come in, it's almost like I likened it, and I've written down like a herd of elephants. I don't know. It's really weird. It's like it's almost like a trumpeting elephant. I don't know. It's really odd. But in a very good way. It's got, almost like it has a sort of 90s heavy rock bordering grunge sort of feel to it, but not in any way like that, if that makes any sense. It normally doesn't when I make these crap comparisons. But when it sort of got into it, I sort of got the feeling of sort of early Smashing Pumpkins, maybe something like that. But it's like you said, it's really sort of powerhouse vocal performance. So I've never heard of them before, but I'd definitely check them out because, I enjoyed that.
Oh, you've never heard of them before. This is not me putting you down. This is a good moment. I relish the idea that I brought new music into your life. Jim, thank you so much.
That's why we're here. That's why we're here. It's great. In fact, we've got a few listeners who listen every week, and they've discovered so much stuff. So I'm quite proud of that. It's quite cool. Maybe a bit beat PJ Harvey I was getting as well, a little bit.
So I've had a really interesting conversation about how vocalists that are women, somehow, if they're doing some kind of grunge, they're always likened to PJ Harvey. Of course, Kat and the Dirty Johnson is listening, but she is probably spinning around in her room now, just clawing her own eyes out that someone else said, PJ Harvey sounds like someone else, X, Y, and Z. So, that makes them sound like PJ Harvey, and I'll stop ranting now so you can answer me.
I'm just saying, there is always the couple, aren't there, that music journalists always wheel out. It's always Debbie Harry, PJ Harvey, or Susie Sue, I think.
I need to understand and dissect this thing so we can purge ourselves this algorithm. What is it?
Sort of power to it. There's a kind of power to it. And the way she was emoting, I just got a bit of like that early kind of PJ Harvey.
Because there's an archetypal energy behind certain artists, we're happy to affix them to new stuff we hear, but there always seems to be a very reductive idea when it comes to PJ Harvey and any female artist that doesn't say like Madonna or some other pop thing. It's either you sound like Madonna or you sound like
that's what I got. I can't help it, you know. Okay. I'm gonna give it, I enjoyed it. I like the guitar as well, but it didn't quite take off for me. I'm gonna give it a 7. Still a good
seven
score.
It's not taken off for you. We've got to talk about numbers later on in the show.
No, I know.
Subject simmer for now.
I was also going to say about comparisons, because this is a new music show. We've got to make comparisons to an extent, because it's just something for people to hang on to. Andy, who produces the show, always says to me, you're making too many comparisons. I'm like, yeah, probably, but it's difficult sometimes not to. We've tried ones where we've not tried to do it as well, haven't we, Jim? Where we've tried not to write any comparisons. So it's a tricky one, but it's just like a shorthand, isn't it? For fans of or whatever. Anyway, Jim.
7.5 for me. I like it.
Do I have to give a number? All right, this is the thing.
Write this down now, so you might as well.
I will trot out my little diatribe numbers now. My issue is that if I give it, like, say, an 8 or 9 out of 10, right? Someone else's 8 or 9 out of 10 might actually be 6. So what value does that number system really have in the whole universe of speaking about music? However, this is your show, Bill. I am a guest in your house. I have taken off my shoes at the doorway, and I will continue to talk about this song as best as possible using numbers. I'm going to give it, in the context of other songs that I've heard of the band, I'm going to give it an 8 out of 10. That's what I'm going to do. It's worked for me. I don't even want to continue talking about the song if it means talking about numbers, but now you know. I'm sorry. You're regretting having me on now. And it's only for you, on your behalf, that I'm actually
made it into a meta podcast where we're questioning everything. Well, it's a good way to be.
The nexus of the end of the world, I say if we're going to start thinking about everything, we might as well start with music.
Okay, so my first pick of the week is Pillow Queen's Handsome Wife. Pillow Queens from Dublin. I love that, and it's sort of an epic sing-along with belting riffs. And there's more of an American influence for I've heard from Pillow Queens before. Pillow Queens are from Dublin, and they champion the queer scene in the city, and they love to I tap into those issues, I think. And I think this is one of those And the vocals, the Irish vocals give it such a hooky and Moorish quality, I've written down. And I've gone back to it numerous times. I believe the album is coming out this year. I just really love that song. I really love it. What do you think, Jim?
Yeah, I love it when bands sing in their accents. And it's not necessarily so clear on that one for me, but I went back and I listened to a few more bits and pieces that they've done. And there's like an acoustic set they did, I saw on YouTube, I think it was. And she sings really nicely in a Dublin accent. And too often, bands even from Dublin, like, seem to sort of remove their accent from their singing voice. Like, it's not even the case of putting an American accent on a lot of times. It's just you put some faux accent on that doesn't seem to represent where they're from. And she certainly doesn't do that. Like I said, killer riff. It feels really familiar. But also, I don't know, it's not necessarily heard that some of them quite like that, but it's really infectious. I was trying to think what the riff sounded like, and I was listening to it over and over again this afternoon. And all of a sudden it dawned on me that the beginning's a bit like Hindu Times by Oasis.
Niche reference there.
Interesting
reference.
Yeah. I checked out more of their stuff, so I'm looking forward to the album when it comes out.
Yeah, they've had a few singles over the year. In fact, I think I tipped them in 2018. So yeah, I was quite surprised that they still hadn't had a debut album out. So what do you think, John?
I was going to and fro on this track because I always try and think of a context where I'm going to play it. I mean, this is the kind of thing that I might play in the garden, but then again, if I'm in the garden, I might have already chosen something else that's a bit more close to my heart. And I do think, a bit like the Healthy Junkies song before it, knowing what the song's about does actually inflate my sense of feeling towards it. It gives it a certain amount of worth. The Healthy Junkies song was more about discrimination in the workplace. This song, what's it about? Because I know they've got lots of they want to push for the trans agenda, but what's the song about?
Handsome Wife begins with a glimpse into an emotional homecoming, one that intensifies and romanticizes the seemingly insignificant. Throughout the mundane but tender moments are held up and deified, paying reverence to the ease with which love can thrive outside the realms of tradition.
Okay. I mean, for me, identity politics being a big part of my life at the moment, it gives it a little bit more of a reason for me to go back to it. But on the first listen, it felt like, as Jim was saying, something I'd heard before, but not in the way that was transgressive enough for me to think that, yeah, I need to recommend this to other people. That being said, there was good musicianship. I thought the video was pretty nice, shoegazy. And I did have a number out of 10.
That's good. It's always good on this program.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed it, and I think it grew on me as well. It's one of those ones that grew on me. Like the stuff that I've heard from them before, they had this one called, I think it was Gay Girls. They had one called Gay Girls, which really was like an anthem again.
That's
for the queer community. So yeah, and there's a togetherness. It's about togetherness as well as a song. And I think it's a bit more like hi-fi compared to the stuff they've had out before. I believe the album is coming out in September. It's called In Waiting.
I found it really quite immediate for me, actually. The first time
I liked it when I first heard it. It's just, it's grew and grew the more I heard it. You know what I mean? It's one of those ones. Mm-hmm. And the hook and the guitars, especially the guitars. Back to the arbitrary nature of scores again. John has made me feel really self-conscious about the score thing. I'm going to give it a big fat 8 because I picked it and, like, you know.
Wow.
To me, that means, you know, my 8 means that I love it. So there you go. I'm contextualizing it all for you, John. John, what's your number you had in mind, arbitrary number?
Well, this is the thing. I mean, it's, for me, maybe I'm putting too much, emphasis on context, but we're living in a very strange time now. So anything that's obviously made before that time may seem seemingly kind of distant and kind of like what I would say 50s music would sound like to a teenager growing up in, say, 1977. Do you know what I mean? It's not really speaking to me. Having said that, their press release was really well written, and I hope if I check out more of their music that the music will actually do what the press release did for me in terms of my interest. So, power bill over. I'll give it 6 out of 10.
Chip?
7.5.
he's got this thing about giving things 7.5, which again, you know.
Yeah, I'm just, Jim, I respected you, man. Don't go the way of this weirdness. You can't do halves. What the hell? Come on. It's either a 7 or it's an 8. All right.
Diplomatic.
Well, obviously, don't read Pitchfork, John.
My diplomatic standpoint. I feel like 7 feels like it's being a bit stingy when we're doing this. 8, it's not really an 8. So I have to sit on a fence.
There you go. He's overthinking it and being a weasel. So, Jim, your first track of the week.
So my first track for this week is a band called Drugstore Romeos, and this is Quotations for Locations. From one of the usual PRs that bombard me with stuff on a weekday. The main sort of spiel that it came through on the headline of the email that I got was it's the band, they were from Fleet. Now, Fleet is a tiny little town, well, barely a town, 5 minutes down the road from me in Hampshire, and nothing comes from Fleet. So I was quite surprised that they kind of led with that in the title of this email that I got. But So I gave it a go, and I really enjoyed it, actually. I mean, I had been given some shit for sort of slagging things off that sound quite minimal and sort of bedroom sounding. And you could argue this is as well. There's kind of very, you know, synthetic beats. It's quite simple. But there's something that I find really engaging about it. I'm not entirely sure what it is. It's sort of on a, like, you know, a sort of cerebral level. I don't know why I enjoyed it quite so much. I don't know whether it's because I felt some kind of kinship with someone, even though they're way, way younger than me, obviously. But they're so local, and it's like there's nothing goes on in Fleet, which you can kind of see why it's almost like dreamlike, and they're taking themselves away from the mundane of Northeast Hampshire. But yeah, and they met at the Pharmacy Film College, which is where I went to college as well, 23 years ago. But yeah, I just think it's like minimalist pop, gauging, not pointlessly whimsical, but it's like vocals, like she's singing in your ear, though. It's like she's just stood. Mm. If you have it in your headphone, it sounds like she stood behind you. But it's almost like this weird, sinister edge. So if it's in a horror.
Yeah, I was trying to remind. I was trying to think what it was reminding me of, and it was a bit Black Box Recorder. Do you remember them?
Yeah, yeah. It's almost like something out of Black Mirror as well. Like she's singing you a lullaby, but she'll slit your throat any second.
Yeah.
Is that, that from Black Mirror? That's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I quite enjoyed it as well. And I quite, like you said, her voice is quite delicate, isn't it? It's like almost like she's speaking in your ear, as you said. And there's a kind of bouncy ball Casio beat and little synths and stuff. What did you think, John?
Dreamy. Very dreamy. A less guilty escape than it ought to be. Not to harp on a point, I just feel it was a very strange and important point in pop culture at the moment, which can't really be denied by those who claim to be spokespeople for us musicians. And obviously this was made before the last week's events. I thought it was very inviting. You're right about the vocal. There is something disturbing about it because of how, you know, when you hear like, you're in an airport and you have this automated system, or if you're in like, say, McDonald's, you've got these automated voices. Now you've got this weird idea that it's kind of supposed to be comforting, but it's a bit strange. So yeah, I'd say it's probably vying for my top spot in terms of what we've got playing today, or maybe, well, I don't know, there's quite a few songs actually that we haven't yet played that are kind of in that place, but I do like it. There's something very kid-alt about it, you know. It sounds like it's made for adults, but kids can enjoy it, or vice versa, in Neil Gaiman's book. So yeah, thank you for bringing Drugstore Romeo back into my life, because it's been some time.
And they're quite young, are they? Quite young?
I think so. They don't specify their ages or anything. Their debut single, Now You're Moving, was only released late last year.
Yeah, I remember listening to that. I quite like it.
There was another one, Frame of Reference, early this year. So this is only their third single.
I'll kick the scores off. It's a hard one to judge, because I get the impression that if I heard more, I'd really love them, but I need to hear more. So 7. Jim?
Hmm.
8 for me.
I'll give Drugstore Romeo 7. I did see them live. Where was it? It was somewhere in the East. I can't remember the name of the place, but it's very near Aldwych. But yeah, they were really nice people. They were still embryonic. I mean, you discussed them as they are a new band, but I don't know how long a band is around for before they become an old band. Because I don't really think of them as new, but at the same time, I don't think of them as nothing to say, if that makes sense. So
yeah, it was only based on the fact that their debut single, according to that press release, was late last year.
Anyway, back to you, John.
Bob Villain I found through a compilation that was put up by Nova Twins that was really celebrating Black artists. Yeah. And We Live Here is the name of the track, and it is awesome.
Lovely area before you come here. Lovely.
Free school dinners for the poor. Pizza with a side of misery. Teacher said when I leave, no one here will miss me. Didn't know I was a sinner, but if they say so, well I must be. Big lips, white nose, God knows no one will trust me. Mum don't look like me, but thank God she still loved me. Neighbours called me nigger, told me go back to my own country. Said since we arrived, this place has got so ugly. But this is my fucking country, and it's never been fucking lovely.
We live in a pyramid. We live here. We live in a pyramid. We live here.
racist, you're just proud. Why should you be left out? The fairies get a march, and the knickknacks get a month. We've got the right to vote. I mean, what more could we want? Free to go where I like, if I look like I belong. If not, fuck off. Go on, boy, move along. Remember Stephen Lawrence? He too was free to roam. 18 years old at the bus stop, murdered on his way home. We live in a pyramid. I was called nigger, I was about 7 or 8 years old. I was playing across the street and one of the older kids called me it. I went home for bath time a little later and asked my mum what it meant. My white mum, she told me it was a bad word. We did in the pyramid. We live here. We did in the pyramid, mate. We fucking live here, you cunt.
Yeah, I liked it, and I love the sort of expression of rage and frustration. Really, what was your reasoning, John?
Various different things. Two of the main ones being that a person who is entering a field of music which is predominantly, say, peopled by people who are Caucasian, and having something to say within that that can reach those people and people that look like me, I think is difficult. And also, once you do it, it feels dangerous. It feels powerful. It feels very much on point regarding my last diatribe regarding how things are changed now. He seems to be in the middle of it and seems to understand it. So it was punk rock for me. I want to listen to more, and I hope you guys do too.
Yeah, very prescient with the Black Lives Matters protests going on around the world and the scenes in London this weekend and just everything that's going on at the moment. George Floyd, of course.
Yeah.
The tragedy that happened in America. There was a lyric you picked out, wasn't there, Jim? You really liked.
Oh, there were several I liked. I mean, this is my country, and it's never been fucking lovely. I think it was beautiful.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And especially now, that's certainly how I feel. Anyway, but the last. I mean, it's a general repetitive chorus, wasn't it? But it was just the last bit. It was, we didn't appear out of thin air. We live here, you cunts.
Yeah. I love that. So
many reasons. That's what I'm saying. Like, you can't listen to it and not feel something. Whereas it's very easy for us to have records which are having the simulacra or the appearance of being powerful emotive pieces, but ultimately you have to do a lot of work with them. This, you didn't have to do any work. It worked. You know, it's not a passive piece at all. And I think that speaks to a lot of people's current mood.
Exactly. You know? Yeah, perfect.
It's kind of a balance of sounds as well, isn't it? There's a kind of a post-punk thing, but there's also a slightly metal thing almost in the chorus.
Yeah, I'd say it's hard rock because I find all these other offshoots, they have this kind of cultural significance. So once you say it and you see it doesn't quite fit with the song or the piece of art, then it's like, what am I really saying? Why do we get almost strangulated by some of these outdated terms? Yeah. But yeah, it's heavy rock with a good punk aesthetic.
It's very punk, isn't it? I did write down sort of the first time, just based on the fact that, you know, it was very sweary, but also there was more sort of musicianship behind it. I sort of wrote, it was almost as if Idols and Sleaford Mods had created some kind of terrible
love monster
band or something, but with more sensible lyrics and, you know, slightly better guitar shit.
I heard of some of the other stuff, though, and there's a bit of hip-hop in what he does as well. But what I really got was the vocal, really, to be honest.
Yeah, I think if he wanted to put his point across, I don't think there was a much better way of doing it than with a straight-down-the-middle punk rock song, really, and it certainly worked a treat.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like he's swearing to make it sound edgy. It just sounds like that's what he happened to do in the take, and he thought, well, keep that in, you know. So
exactly. Fully first take. Done. See you later.
Well, seldom is that ever really the case. We want it to be the case, but the movies are all lying to us. Don't watch The Doors and think you know anything about that band. That's what I'm saying.
Okay. So what are we getting? I'll give that an 8 because I just thought it was fun and it was just, and it was really very prescient and angry, and I like the sort of expression of anger at the moment. So, and especially like Britain as a thing that gets, like, you know, all this dramatized nature of it, and the fact that you can sort of look at it and say, actually, there's some dark points to it, you know, there's a lot of darkness in our history and everything, you know, so, you know, it face up to it, you know, look at the face and tell it to fuck off, you know. So I like that about it. I like that about it. So yeah, 8 for me. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh god, it's a painful experience every time. I think I'm going to get used to it. It's like, oh god, I've got to give it a number. But this is the thing. All these songs are trying to do different things. So yeah, every time I say a number, it feels like I'm comparing it to what the last thing tried to
achieve. No, not at all. It's of course.
So we're going to give it an 8 and then we're going to move on. That's what we're going to do.
Yep.
9.
Ooh, nice.
Ooh. Ask, Jim, did you know about Bob Villain before this podcast?
No, never.
Neither of us have heard of him.
That is awesome. Buy yourself a drink. I'm so happy that you've discovered two new bands. Sorry, continue with your show, Bill. Just have to say that.
All right, this is Fella Gnocchi and Ghost Culture. This is Bark.
Mama,
yeah, really interesting artist who came to me this week, and it's from his new EP, which is coming out. I won't even attempt to pronounce the name of it because I'll butcher it. But it's on Pra Recordings on the 10th of July, and there's this track, and then there's a new track coming out this week as well. And he's worked with Ghost Culture, which is James Greenwood, who's kind of an electronic head. Fela Gnocchi is a percussionist from Guinea and West Africa, and he sings in French, English, Susu. He sings in a range of languages, basically. African dialects. I don't want to get them wrong. So yeah, there you go. But yeah, I just love the way it's sort of like a culture clash, really. You know, it's kind of that mix between African chanting and the fragments of melody mixed with the sort of more up-to-date, you know, percussion, that kind of beat in the background, and the kind of synths and the electronic, minimal electronic production of 2020, I guess. Yeah, I just like that culture clash and the way it sort of builds. And it's quite joyous at points as well. It means blessing in English, the title of the track. Where I grew up, we say you have two blessings from your parents. It's not something money can buy. One of my friends told me he couldn't understand why he was struggling, why he couldn't succeed in business, and why he had no opportunities coming his way. There was an old man listening to us talking, and he asked, "Do you have parents?" My friend said he did. The man said, "Go and visit them. And when you see them working, you must help them, give them a hand. And once you do, you will get a blessing. That is the secret of life." I thought that was a really good anecdote, you know, and that kind of gave me an extra reason to like the song. Jim?
I think you can probably know.
It's not your kind of thing, is it?
It's not necessarily my kind of thing. But I give it a lot of listens. I say it's quite a sort of affecting mix. I sort of thought it almost sounded like they had that. Like when you said it was a mixture of cultures, I almost thought there was like an Indian element to it as well. And also so with the obviously African chanting.
The way it relies on percussion, yeah, I could see.
Yeah, that. And it was, I don't know, sort of like the throat things as well, when you have like Indian singing, like Ravi Shankar or something like that. It felt a little incongruous as well. I know what you mean by it sort of mixes cultures up and things like that. I don't know, I just didn't, I almost would have preferred, you know, something slightly more sort of organic from it. I don't know, something didn't sit right with me. I don't know why, but yeah.
I think I've had the advantage of hearing the EP, so it's kind of more of a recommendation for the EP, really, as much as this particular song. John?
I think based on what I heard, I would be intrigued to hear the EP, only because it's something that's completely alien to me. I don't think in his head he thought about me and my personality and what I listened to when he sat down to create his dialogue via music, right? So through that, I will be intrigued. It was definitely... it had a lot of exotica to it. Mm. That being said, like Jim, it's not really the stuff that I normally gravitate to. And I think there could have been a little bit more dynamic. It's almost like there was a fear of quietude. Again, echoing Jim, that there was something non-organic about the mix. Like the old bluesman, I always equate music to almost like, well, it is a very sexual idea. And so therefore, if something's continuously going on without any thinking about me, I feel it's very, very selfish. So I didn't really feel that it was for me in that way. But it did remind me of elements of, say, Amnesiac era Radiohead. So that is my way in, I think. It could grow on me. Because like the basic idea isn't bad. It's just I feel that they're relying on the concept rather than the execution to hook me in.
I think it's a very 2020 sound of the electronica, the kind of sparseness of it. And I get what you're saying. They could have used some of the more like, you know, obvious African percussion and things like that would have made it maybe given it more of a grounding, yeah.
I suppose that may well have been the point, though, is that it was...
Yeah, that is the point. That is
and obviously being so sort of completely sort of separate from what the organic feel would be. And I don't know, that it sort of lost its meaning almost for me, that it didn't have that kind of where it came from. But, you know, fair enough.
I mean, there is this strange, I use that word again, algorithm that we have when it comes to electronic music, when we believe that it can't be as... organic, say like guitar, bass, and drums music. That really doesn't have to be the case. I mean, Aphex Twin proved this ages ago that we can do that. We can have it. So I don't get why we still hear mixes like this, where it's like, all right, we know that bit's happening. Take it away so I can appreciate it, you know, and then give it back to me. And it didn't quite understand that as part of the conversation that it could have.
We'll kick off with scores. Yeah, I kind of agree, but you know, it's my track, so I'm going to give it a 7. As you say, that is still a good score. Jim?
6.
John?
6.
I think it's over to you now, Jim.
It is. So my last new track of the week is by a band called RMFC and Reader. He's from Australia. He's only 18, but he does have a live band that includes friends and a girl and his girlfriend in it as well. But they haven't done many gigs. It's just something I picked up off Bandcamp and trawling through it. A lot of very boring, generic stuff that was just nearly made me fall asleep until this came on. I just enjoyed it. It's kind of got this like television type fuzz guitars. It starts all punky, and then the drums sort of fade into almost like hard to explain strokes sort of sounding, and it's almost got that kind of is this it raw strokes kind of sound to it. It's not quite punk. That's sort of that kind of punky New York kind of sound, even though he's coming from Australia. I just quite enjoyed it. It's just say something that stuck out a little bit from a bit of a Sia mundane tosh.
I quite enjoyed it. I quite like the sound of the guitars. And the vocals as well. Yeah, and I put that it encapsulates a youthful frustration. I don't know why I got that. I just got this kind of like, you know... I don't know where that came from, but
it seemed to be kind of like pigeonholders. They're called paranoid punk, which I'm not entirely sure I get completely from that, but I sort of know what it means.
The kind of people who like throw stuff at 5G masts and stuff like that. Is that anyway, John, what did you think?
Yeah, it's my kind of thing. Scuzzy rock and all that. It's not particularly sophisticated, but then neither am I. Vocals weren't really contrasting enough with the music for me to really truly give it more than the number I have. But music was vibey, spiky. Surprised that he was from Australia, because he did sound vaguely American. But then again, if you're looking at Australian and that kind of lo-fi rock. They do draw a lot from that kind of skate culture that you get in America. Though there was a lot of Atari Teenage Riot in there as well. I would recommend it. I want to hear more. I hope that not all of it is the vocal being so locked into what the rhythm and the tonality of the guitars are saying. So, yeah.
What does the name stand for, Jim?
Absolutely no idea. Look for that.
So, I'll give that a 7 again. I'm kind of being quite consistent on these sevens here this week. John?
I'm actually going to give it a 7.
There you go.
I'll tell you what, on that note, a really good number system is to use 4. Because guess what you can't do? You can't always like go for 3. It's like, what's going on here, you know? And 2 becomes a more respectable number. If you do 5, well, 3 becomes your new 7. So just putting it out there.
Yeah, no, we used to, on the website, we used to use 5-star system, you know.
Oh, I don't want you to lie to me.
It's in the kind of middle. It's kind of in the middle.
I don't want you to lie to me. That's not the aim of my little, like, insurrection here. I want you to tell me the truth using words and numbers. I want to free you from the limitations and reductions on the numerical choices that you have.
Anyway, Jim, your score, keeping things on track.
Oh, yeah. 7.5. All right. Obviously.
Coward score. 7.5. Is your half leading towards, I should say, towards like 7 on the 7.5? Moving towards 8. Don't think they'd buy that over.
All right, okay. 7.25 then. Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay. You're getting into pitchfork realms again, Jim. We're going to go into the cult classics now. John, your classic first, and it is a classic.
Indeed, Sonic Youth, cool thing. For many reasons, it's becoming a bit of a phrase that I use, but there's so many things to talk about when it comes to these bands we've chosen. So multifaceted, the fact that they chose to do something with so many pressures, I think, for them to be more indie rock. They do something that's quite cross-cultural, and it's lasted the ages because of that. You know, there's nothing worse than someone doing something like this, this kind of collaboration, and it not really having an overarching ability to really keep me and other people that discover the band invested. So yeah, Sonic Youth with Cool Thing.
Feel, baby.
I just want you to know that we can still be friends.
it is my favorite Sonic Youth track, actually. I just really love it. Yeah, and I love the way it sort of juxtaposes the sort of careering guitars and percussion with the sort of meta vocal, really, almost, isn't it?
It's kind of very knowing
and kind of referencing oppression, feminism, and also selling out, of course. You know, that's what it's kind of about. Cool thing and all that, you know. I got a thing with Sonic Youth. I love some of their stuff, but other stuff kind of passes me by. But this one, yeah, love it.
What do you think of Washing Machine?
It's good. It's good. But this one just hits me. I don't know what it is about it. Yeah. It's the vocal, I think.
Choose between both. It's just like, Washing Machine is an album that people don't really reference. They always talk about the others. But yeah, fair enough. Yeah.
Jim?
Sonic Youth, I think it's one of those bands that was a bit before my time. I mean, I was a teenager in the mid-90s, so it wasn't something that sort of was on my radar too much, and not many of my friends listened to them, really. And when I've tried, it's one of those ones that I sort of, I don't know why, managed to sort of lose interest whilst I was listening to it. And it's one of those bands I feel like I should really like, and I did like enjoy listening to that, but it almost happened again, and I don't really know why. I was sort of listening to it. I listened to my playlist of all these songs that are on this week's pod, and over and over again. And for some reason, I just didn't latch onto it again. And I don't know what it is. I don't know whether it's Thurston Moore or whether it's... I like the spoken word book in Kim Gordon. And actually, yeah, like you said, the sort of when I actually listen to some of the lyrics from third or fourth time round, say it's quite, you know, an important and sort of almost like a cultural thing that they're sort of addressing. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know what it is about something, because they're obviously such an influential and pop, you know, big band for so many bands that came through the 90s, and even now pit bands sort of sound a lot like it, you know, pioneering of lo-fi kind of rock sort of side of it. But yeah, I like it. It just doesn't move me for some reason. I couldn't really tell you why. I tried.
Honest, sounds so professional. Thank you, Jim. I can't get them all right for you, mate. I do what I do. I try what I can.
He's really trying. He struggled.
Well, yeah, as I said before it started, it's got this whole idea of referencing itself within the context of the culture. I mean,
self-referential.
Yeah, I mean, maybe like it's a very obvious kind of comparison, but like when you look at the Beatles' Sgt. Pepper album, it was very self-aware of themselves. You've got a version of themselves in the corner and you've got who they are in the middle. This is kind of what Sonic Youth is doing here with Chuck D. And it still works now. I don't quite know all the reasons, but I'd say the main reasoning is because we are a very minutiae-like culture. We like to dissect what's going on. It's not enough for us to imbibe the drink. We need to look at all the E numbers and know how it was sourced and where it came from. And that's what I get from this track.
Nine. Go on.
Seven for me.
I'm going to give it an 8. It's not my favourite Sonic Youth track, but when I was thinking about classics today, I wanted to do something that seemed to be something that spoke to me now as well as when I first heard it, which was a bit like you, Jim. I actually heard it in the 90s when I was a teenager, and I got into them like many teenagers of the time in England via Nirvana. So I don't know if I would have discovered them or the Pixies if Kurt wasn't so guilty about his influences when he really didn't have to be.
Yeah. It's funny because I was really into Nirvana, but I don't remember listening to Sonic Youth until much later on. It's funny, really.
Okay.
But it's interesting. Okay. It's me. Okay, this is Akela with Find No Enemy.
Second generation, black Caribbean and half white Scottish, whatever that means. See, lately, I feel confused with the boxes, cause to me, all they do is breed conflict. It's not that I've lost touch with reality of racism, sexism and nationality. Just to me, all seems like insanity. Why must I rob you of your humanity to feel good about mine? It's all about crime, dehumanizing's how I justify them. So I must keep lying about the history of Africa, so I can live with the massacres and repeat my mantra, Muslim terrorist so I can sleep at night as bombs take flight. Eyes open wide but I'm blind to the sight. Too busy chasing the perfect life and the working class keep them uneducated. Truly educated men could never be a racist. Educate is to draw out what is within. Are we not all the same under the skin? I got a heart like yours that pumps blood and oxygen. And insecurities, a whole lot of them. I'm scared like you deep down. I really do care that the world's not fair like you. But I don't even believe my own prayers like you. Chasing career, going nowhere like you. Lost in a fog of my own insecurity. I hold myself up as an image of purity. And I judge everybody else by the colour of the skin or the size of their wealth. But it's not good for my health, as the only one I ever really judge is myself. The oppressor must suffer like the oppressed. Though I pretend I'm in control of this mess by inflating my ego, puffing my chest. See our weakness and I need to show strength for what we think strong is. Cause if we're honest, true strength is the strength to be honest. And if I'm honest, I am just tired. If I'm honest, I am just tired. Tired of every day filling up my car and knowing that I'm paying for the bombs in Iraq. Tired of pretending it don't hurt my heart. Of wanting change, not knowing where to start. Tired of listening to all the conditioning and all the forms that they got me filling. And next time you see what you think is a thug and despise him, please know I was just like him. Cause I was like 8 first time I saw crack. Same time I first smoked weed, choking on blowbacks. First time I saw knives penetrate flesh, it was meat cleavers to the back of the head. As I grew and teenage years passed, many more knives pierced and the shots blast. And I ain't saying I had the worst upbringing, but there's a million young men just like me in prison. We complain about racism, elevate clowns with their trousers down, swinging they dick round. Maybe that is not quite literal, but everything they do is just a stereotypical. To my real fans, I feel your pain and I get the messages, but don't complain that we ain't got more fame. We're playing a part. They can keep the charts, all I want is your hearts. They can keep the charts, all I want is your hearts. They can keep the charts, all I want is your hearts. Call it black radio, don't make me laugh. So is black music all about tits and ass? You don't represent nothing, you're just pretending. When was the last time you ever played Hendrix or Miles Davis or John Coltrane or Ella Fitzgerald or Billie Holiday? We can call it urban. To me, that's cool. If urban means street, that includes jazz too and rock for that matter. Go ask Mick Jagger or Jimmy Page what they were listening to. The blues, not discrediting Love Zeppelin too. Just giving credit where credit is due. That blog soap word rappers still use. All it really shows is we still self-abuse. That was the word that was used to kill Kelso, Coltrane and Emmett Till. That was the word that the conscience eased and made people please to hung you from trees. That was the word that let the whips crack. No matter what you say, you can't take it back. And I could say they're black, so I feel their pain easier. But 1915, look at Armenia. It's the whole world, this human stupidity that we choke ourselves to death, quite literally. And I can talk with my comfortable mouth and my comfortable clothes and my comfortable house. The tables will turn, we can but stall them. Every empire on this earth has fallen. So unless we can find another way, maybe not today, but it'll come one day. And it may sound like I'm bitter, but in fact, truth be told, I am quite the opposite. I wake every day and I'm overwhelmed just to be alive and be like no one else. And the sheer weight of the thought of space is enough to keep my little ego in place. All that we chase and try to replace, all along it was right in our face. The only way we can ever change anything's to look in the mirror and to find no enemy. The only way we can ever change anything, look in the mirror and to find no enemy.
Heard this in 2011, I just thought it was really powerful. Is it hip hop? Is it blues? Is it? I just really love the kind of the honesty of it and the deep introspection of the human condition, and also, you know, of oppression, racism, Yeah. And also, I love the way he goes into sort of black culture as well, and kind of, and he's very well aware of it because he was one of these people himself who I've seen him talk about using the N-word in hip hop, basically. And he said that he realized at some point where the N-word wasn't something he should be using in music. And I just thought that was a brilliant self-awareness that he had. And obviously, ever since then, I followed his career and the things he says about racism and prejudice, because he's actually lived it, really speak to me, you know. So, and it's obviously at the moment, it's very relevant. And I just love how sparse it is, and that kind of like, that kind of bluesy riff, but yet it's kind of laid back almost. But the vocal is just so powerful. And the rhymes are just so powerful. And the way he sort of dissects urban, the term urban music, I love that. And I think as well, I think even as a, you know, a 40-year-old white man, I can see the privilege I've got. And I think looking at yourself in the mirror and, you know, and checking your own privilege is important, especially at the moment with everything going on in the world, Black Lives Matters and everything. So I just think it's the song that stuck with me, and I've seen him a couple of times, and he's brilliant. A Carla or a Kayla, or however you say his name. I think he's a brilliant artist.
Yeah, I think I've seen him talk more than I have as an artist, and I don't mean that in a derogatory way. I mean as in I think I've seen him like as a not as a vox pop, but he's been on things where he's talked about his experiences and how growing up as mixed race and things like that, mixed heritage. And I wasn't really particularly familiar with any of his music, but I really enjoyed that. And I said, when I first thought it was going to be 6 minutes, and I thought, well, this is going to be quite long, and it's going to be, you know, it's obviously going to be him telling a story. And with the same sort of the music in the background was very cyclical, it was very sort of repetitive. And I thought maybe that great, but it didn't in the slightest. And it was just like a fascinating storyteller more than anything. It's going to be, I almost, because the way the drums and the bass were, it almost sounded like a pared down, almost Rage Against the Machine type, but kind of, as I say, pared down, quieter, slower, but that kind of almost intensity as well, with a very sort, and then he with rhythmical arpeggio guitar with him, you know, rapping or even to say, he almost felt more like a storyteller. And I really enjoyed that about that, because sometimes with hip hop, I do find this obsession with the beats behind a hip hop track a little bit boring. And I don't really find that, that's one of the least interesting things about hip hop or even a rap artist or what have you. And that's what I really enjoy, especially about him. It was just completely a fusion of different types of music, but with this sort of a message behind his rap. And yeah, I loved it.
What do you think, John?
Where to start? I'm going to get quite geeky on this. Have you guys ever read a graphic novel or large comic, as I really like to call them, because graphic novel is a bit of a wanky way to say it. But have you read a graphic novel called The Dark Knight Returns?
Yes.
Okay. So for those who aren't aware of it at this point in the story, Batman is being a bit of a menace again, right? We've got James Gordon. He stepped down from being commissioner, and a new, younger detective has stepped in. It's her job, Officer Yindel, Commissioner Yindel, to capture Batman. She is, like, not putting up with any fucking bat signal. She's not using a bat phone to call him. She just wants to capture him. And Commissioner Gordon, he goes against this idea. So, look, he's kind of too big. You don't really want to, like, you know, try and dissect the Batman in terms of whether he's right or wrong. He just is. And that's what I get with Akela. Like, you can't really break him down. He's got incredible elocution skills. He can write. He's a musician. Honestly, if in 30 years' time he's like an MP running for prime minister, I hope he gets in. And that's not even me talking about the song yet, because that's just how of erudite he is. The music is on point. His vocals are clear. He wants me to know what he's saying. Yeah, like one of my issues when it comes to a certain kind of music is that I don't think it's made for people outside of that. And that is a strength, but it's also a weakness if you really want to push forward an agenda that people maybe in the mainstream may need to hear. Akela knows how to do that without in any way subjugating himself to going through hoops and whatnot that he doesn't have to jump through. So he's got the passion. He's clear. He's still relevant. I would play this in my garden, going back to earlier. I would go into my garden especially to play it. Part of me is a traditionalist that kind of wants a chorus, but it's because it's Akela or Carla, however you may want to pronounce it. We should find out. We should do the fucking work and find out how you say his name. It's true. He's got a lot of energy. He's honest. He's tirelessly honest. He makes me want to be even more honest. please make him Prime Minister when he runs for this. Listening to this in the future, thinking, well, I'm not sure. Him and Tony Blair's great grandchild, just go for a Kayla or a Carla. All right? They're both great.
There you go.
Eight for me.
Okay.
Jim?
Yeah, eight.
See, I'm looking at my notes and it says 7 out of 10, but that can't be right. I mean, the issue for me is context, because he's got so much to say and who he is. I feel that more numbers ought to be on there. So even though it says 7 out of 10, let's just say that I said 9.
Fair play.
Okay, we've got one more track, I believe, Jim.
You have. It's
Norfolk Classic.
Michael Classic is a band called Swans, and this is Blind.
Some of us are weak, and some endure. Some people live their life with a violence that's pure and clean. But I saw a man cry once, down on his knee, in the corner of a darkened cell, and his pain meant nothing to me. But I was younger then, and young men never die. When I walked out in the sun, I was strong, clear-minded and blind. I don't say a prayer for anyone, it doesn't do any good. Please don't ask me a question, it'll just be misunderstood. And if you could step inside me, you'd feel what hatred brings. And if you saw with my eyes, you'd see what self-deception means. I was younger once, and I created a lie. Though my body was strong, I was self-deluded, confident and blind. Now show some pity for the weak of will. Cause when we're drinking, we can never be filled. Show some understanding for the lonely fool. Because when I am drinking, I am out of control. Well, I was never young, and nothing has transpired. When I look in the mirror, I feel dead, I feel cold, I am blind, I am blind, I am blind, I we'll be right back.
yeah, I vaguely heard the name Swans, and I was sort of in the back of my mind thinking that they were a hardcore band. And then I was actually, this came up, this was a suggestion and a recommendation by Joe Bevan from Desert Journalist, who was on the pod a few weeks ago. And I loved it. First time I heard it, he said, oh, it's heartbreaking and beautiful and everything. I thought, well, I'm just going to give this a go. I don't know why, I don't know always. And it was amazing. And I then checked back to see what they were. I thought, I recognised the name, and I looked back and see when they were sort of, they formed and everything. And they are from 1992. And they are a hardcore band. They're quite a really heavy, hardcore band. But this album that it's from, White Light from the Mouth of Infinity from 1991, isn't like that at all. It's sort of really sort of it's almost as if the National had got into a time machine and gone back to the early 90s and made an album. Because if you ask me, they've completely bloody ripped this album off. And I love this album. I've listened to it once this week because I've only heard the first discovered them this week. And yeah, it's really, really good. It's just, it's beautiful. Like she said, it's beautiful and heartbreaking. It's got this really like lovely cyclical. The synths are just like really fresh. They're fresh sounding. They don't sound like there's something that's been overdone. But then it's from 91, isn't it? But coming from this really hardcore early 80s sort of American sound, it's almost as if they've heard and taken the Sisters of Mercy, REM, and the Pixies and made it into this sound for the early 90s that are now being aped to the nth degree, it seems. I love it.
Yeah, I was quite surprised by it as well, because I thought Swans were like a noisy band. But yeah. This is quite, reflective and sort of almost cinematic in a way.
Yeah, very
I was kind of thinking like Bonnie Prince Billy or somebody. But I quite enjoyed it. I wouldn't say it left a sort of indelible mark on me, though. What do you think, John?
This is the thing. I try not to make comparisons, but for the positive reasons that I'll list, I thought of Nick Cave. Yeah. I thought of Echo and the Bunnymen. I believe this guy's story. I don't know quite what he's talking about. There's elements that I picked out. It's only because the music is so orchestral and so swelling, so powerful. Yeah. This isn't music as a badge. And this is something that I did actually see on Joe Bevan's page, because she's a friend of mine on Facebook. I'm not just trying to name drop. Hello, Joe. You're awesome. And apparently your musical taste is still fantastic. I think I'm going to have to tell her how great that music is. It's got great production. It's heavenly. It made me feel that I was in, I don't know, maybe not necessarily outback, but somewhere dusty like America. I wanted to know more, and sometimes we'll think of music as this art form, and constantly we'll hear a lot of crap that tells us that it isn't, that it's just this commodity to make a few people look great in front of their mates, and so they can suggest that they have some kind of power in society as shamans. But this seemed worthy.
I didn't quite get that. But, I suppose sometimes a song, it can take a while to sort of...
Yeah, definitely. No.
Grow on you, I guess.
I've listened to this for a few days now. I think it might have been like Friday or something like that. It's like, it was exactly that, John. It was when she put it up on her Facebook page. And I don't know why I don't always click on what everyone I'm friends with on Facebook suggests or anything. And for some reason, I just did. I think the artwork for it, that kind of cartoon bunny, which is from the album cover. And I don't know what it was, but yeah, it was amazing. And, So I've lived with it for a few days now, and I've played it every single day. So if you've only heard it sort of for a couple of days, a little while. So, no, but yeah, I the album's really good. I listened to that yesterday, and it's sort of on a similar vein, but,
I only listened to it like about an hour and 10 minutes ago, just before the program, and left an indelible mark on me. I mean, I saw it on Joe's wall, and even though the artwork was cool, I thought, well, I'll check it out another time because I've got too much on at the moment. But I feel bad that I didn't check it out straight away. So sorry, Joe, you're awesome. I should have pressed play. There's something wrong with me, not you. Something wrong with me.
Well, social media can break through the algorithms, maybe. music discovery, and it has done here, so that's good. Because we had Tom Gray on last week, and he was talking about like broken music and stuff like that, and how streaming isn't an equitable system, and the way we discover things has definitely changed, hasn't it? If you can break through that and just like get good recommendations off people you trust, then that's a good thing, really. Like, this is what this show's here for, hopefully. I'm going to struggle to give it a mark because, as I say, it didn't leave an indelible mark. And it wasn't really, again, it wasn't what I was expecting. I was expecting an assault of noise on my eardrums. So it kind of threw me off a little bit.
You have to give it a mark.
Seven.
Can I give you that as your new nickname, Bill? I'll just call you Seven from now on. Is that all right?
I think Seven, the girl from Stranger Things has already got that, hasn't she?
Bill's Seven and I'm 7.5, so does that make me better?
Oh, no, Jim, come on. How many 7.5s can you have per show
it's
now?
You're
ruining the bromance that might never be by doing another 7.5.
I'm not giving it 7.5.
It gives most things 7.5.
If he's nicknamed Seven, that makes me 7.5, which makes me better. But no, I'm giving it.
I transcend numbers, I do.
Hey, now you get it.
What's your arbitrary score to round off with, John?
I didn't hear Jim's. What was it?
Nine.
I'm going to give it an 8. It's so much dissonance, this number stuff. I'm glad this is the last song.
You find it painful, don't you? I will
never this again. If you ever have me back on, I will not give you numbers. I'm not sure to ask me back on, but I'm just putting it out there.
Well, they're a special just for you, John.
This is what I'm thinking about. Reformat the show for your guests. There's a whole history about shows and journalists and numbers, and it comes from a time when things were a lot less complicated in terms of our subcultures, let alone our mainstream culture. So now numbers really, truly are irrelevant. They can't speak to a whole group of people in the same way. So destroy the numbers, I say. Destroy them all.
It's just a bit of fun. But you know,
isn't it?
It obviously pains you so much.
Fine, okay. I don't know if I'll ever be allowed back on this, but it was a Grundy moment for me. I didn't swear at you or say anything about your parents, so I'm hoping that those doors aren't really closed, so to speak.
Oh, you'd be fine. Thanks for coming on, John. Anyway, it was fun. Thanks for listening to Show Me Magic, episode 14. We've had John Clay is our special guest.
Yay!
And Jim Orton.
I'll be my own, studio audience. Yay!
And Jim Orton, perennial. Yay! Until the next time. Ta-da.
See you later.
Bye.
You've been listening to Show Me Magic, a Goddess in the TV recommend show. Check out more on goddessinthetvzine.co.uk. We're on our Twitter page, goddessinthetv. We're also on Facebook, goddessinthetvzine, with a dot. Thanks for listening. Until the next time. Ta-da.